In sun-drenched Laguna Beach, an unlikely trio has created their own version of paradise. Ben, compassionate botanist and self-described baddest, has engineered cannabis strains so potent they've developed a cult following. His business partner, Chan, brings military precision from his Navy SEAL days in Afghanistan, along with precious white widow seeds and what Ophelia calls his signature baditude. Completing this unconventional family is O herself, privileged, neglected, and rebellious with her blue-streaked blonde hair and colorful tattoos. She sleeps with both men without jealousy or possessiveness between them. Ben is warm wood, Chan is cold metal. One makes love, the other fucks. Their philosophy is beautifully simple. More love is better than less. Their business thrives on Ben's botanical genius, 30 grow houses producing premium marijuana with health benefits for employees and profit sharing for dealers. It's a perfect ecosystem, until it isn't. Paradise shatters when the Baja cartel sends them a video of 9 severed heads with a clear message: sell to us wholesale at our price, or join the collection of disconnected body parts. What makes the Baja cartel truly terrifying isn't just their violence, it's their ruthless efficiency. They're not just criminals, they're a corporation, vertically integrating all aspects of the drug trade while expanding horizontally into human trafficking and kidnapping. As O succinctly puts it, they're Walmart. Even more unsettling is who runs this empire of blood. Not a stereotypical drug lord, but Elena Sanchez Lacter, Elena La Reina, a 54-year-old woman who never wanted to lead, but took control as the last Lacter standing after drug wars decimated her family. Despite her wealth and power, Elena is profoundly lonely, with a dysfunctional family including her daughter Magdalena studying archaeology at UC Irvine. Her enforcer, Miguel Lacato Arroyo, embodies the cartel's duality: family man with a wife and 3 children in Mission Viejo, running a landscaping business as cover for beheadings and torture. His eyes have turned to stone after seeing and doing terrible things. When Ben and Chan refuse the cartel's demands, paradise becomes hell. O is abducted while shopping, and they receive a video showing her with a chainsaw at her feet. The message couldn't be clearer: cooperate or watch her die. What would you sacrifice to save someone you love? This question haunts Ben and Chan as they're forced to become what they despise. Ben, once proud of doing no harm, finds himself committing increasingly violent acts, from small compromises to ultimately pulling the trigger on a cartel lawyer while thinking of O. Their descent accelerates as they rob cartel cash shipments for ransom money. Their first heist, wearing Leno and Letterman masks, net $765,500, while their second, in Clooney and Pitt masks, brings in $820,000. Each robbery normalizes their criminal behavior, the famous masks hiding the loss of their own identities. The transformation peaks when they ambush a cartel convoy using IEDs and sniper tactics. As Ben waits to trigger the explosives, he confronts the reality that this isn't self-defense, but premeditated murder. Though briefly recalling his belief that murder is the suicide of the soul, he detonates anyway. When Chan is shot, Ben crosses another line by executing wounded survivors. Driving away bloodied, he struggles to justify taking human life through various philosophical frameworks. His realization that it's all fun and games until someone loses an eye becomes a haunting commentary on survival's price in a violent world. Who are the real savages? Cartel members who behead enemies? The American government waging endless wars while profiting from Afghan opium? Privileged suburban consumers ignorant about the violence behind their weekend pleasures? Perhaps civilization itself is built on savagery, merely concealed behind law and order. Winslow delivers a scathing critique of American hypocrisy. Ben sees the war on drugs as a war on drugs likely to be produced and/or consumed by people of color. White drugs like alcohol and prescription opioids create legitimate billionaires. Drugs associated with people of color, marijuana from Mexico, heroin from Afghanistan, cocaine from Colombia, land you in federal prison with mandatory minimums. Chan, shaped by military experience, argues humans are violent by nature, nonviolent by training, noting chimpanzees share 97% of our DNA, yet routinely engage in territorial warfare. He sees humans as chimpanzees with guns, destined for self-destruction, a view contrasting with Ben's initial belief in humanity's capacity for peace. The novel examines artificial borders, both geographical and moral. Southern California becomes a powerful metaphor, a civilization built between ocean and desert despite water shortages, where people reinvented ourselves daily, defied aging and death. This artificial paradise, maintained through resource theft, mirrors civilization's dependence on hidden violence. As the story accelerates, violence transforms from calculated strikes into unbridled chaos. The cartel convoy attack draws intense media attention, conservatives ranting about La Reconquista while liberals debate drug policy. DEA investigators spot signs of professional military involvement, and a gun shop owner recognizes Chan and alerts Lotto. Elena orders Lotto to execute O while Ben and Chan watch. Desperate, they counter by kidnapping Elena's daughter Magdalena, arranging a hostage exchange they know is likely a trap. The exchange location? A desolate desert crossroads where indigenous trails, drug routes, and national borders intersect becomes their final battleground. As captives approach under the harsh sun, Elena signals what appears to be an execution. Surprisingly, her men turn on Lotto instead. Through his wife, Elena discovered his long betrayal. Violence erupts. Lotto dies in a hail of bullets before being beheaded. Elena orders her remaining men to kill Ben, Chan, and O, triggering a massive firefight. When silence falls, a wounded Elena sits against her bullet-riddled Land Rover, surrounded by dead Sicarios. She looks at O, saying, "You see what men are?" O hefts Chan's rifle, declares, "I'm not your fucking daughter," and pulls the trigger. In the aftermath, Ben lies mortally wounded. Rather than attempt escape, O and Chan make their final choice, a suicide pact that transforms their inevitable end into an act of devotion. With steady hands, Chan prepares 3 precise morphine injections. As the drugs take hold, Ben describes Indonesia's paradise, golden beaches under azure skies, emerald jungles teeming with life, exotic birds painting the air with color, and gentle people living by ancient rhythms. "It sounds like heaven," O whispers. The cold in her limbs fades with Chan's warmth as he positions himself behind her, his arm reaching to grasp Ben's hand, completing their circle. O drifts peacefully, consciousness floating on waves breaking against pebbles, punctuated by slowing heartbeats. She envisions their afterlife, a pristine beach where they exist freely, catching fish, picking fruit, and making love like beautiful savages. Even in a world corrupted by violence and greed, love remains humanity's salvation, even if its purest expression comes in death. Perhaps that's the novel's most haunting question. In a world where civilization and savagery blur, is genuine love possible only in death? Or can we preserve our humanity while facing the savage heart within our civilized chest?